Welcome to another episode of Iconic Seasons. On today's off-season episode, we delve into training and wellness. I'm your host, Aaron Meyer, and today we have a very special guest with me, Craig Miller. Craig is someone who introduced me to what has become the cornerstone of modern training almost two decades ago. He's here to share his personal journey that rekindled his passion for training and how each of us can apply it to our own lives, armed with free tools to improve our health and wellness. You can find him on Instagram at Second Prime. Let's get into it.
I think that your branding with Second Prime fits into what a lot of people are doing. I remember when we were started training, I mean, I'm old enough that we didn't lift weights in basketball. That was like a thing that was like, oh, you don't, if you play basketball, don't lift weights. And that changed, well, thankfully, while I was in high school. But now there's just this evolution, and I've been following you, the Second Prime thing that you've got on Instagram, and following this evolution of combining mind and body and training for, you know, purpose and longevity and like a feeling, which I think is a little bit different than maybe how you originally trained. But I just kind of wanted you to speak on maybe what got you into it, and you can tell a little bit of your origin story, and then we can get into more of the nuance of it.
Yeah. I mean, my love affair, I guess, with fitness has been sort of a two-level thing where, to your point, mine actually started growing up, loved basketball, my favorite sport, diehard IU fan, Michael Jordan fan, living up in the region, just perfect time to be a kid growing up and to get to experience Michael Jordan.
Who knew that would be the last time?
Yeah, exactly. It's been a drought, but we had a little glimpse of hope with the Derrick Rose years, and that was fun. But yeah, it's been rough. But so just love basketball. And really, you know, my own estimation and evaluation, I was pretty good in a young age. And so, you know, comparing YMCA leagues and stuff like that, it was before AAU was kind of around, but I don't feel like it was commonplace. And just, you know, one of the better players, you know, in the city, if you will. I went through just some stuff, some family transitions in my life where divorces and remarriages and things like that. And so I went into probably looking back some level of like high functioning, low grade depression almost. And I just chalked it up to, oh, you're always tired when you're, you know, your body's growing and everything like that. And I think that was part of it. But I went from just playing ball anytime I could every single day. You know, I was the kid shoveling off my patio so I could play when it was, you know, 20 degrees out and we had 12 inches of snow on the ground to really like, you know, and the other part is kind of weird. Like you have recess when you're a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Playing twice a day, every day. And then you go to middle school and you don't have recess. And, you know, I was come home and I just like turn on the TV and nap. And so all I had to say, like the other kids started to surpass me. So, you know, I made the teams through middle school and everything like that. And going into high school, I missed out on a lot of the summer workouts going in. You know, it's easy to blame other reasons, but like,
sure.
LaPorte is a small town. It's sort of an insider's club to a degree. Our family didn't really have an established name or anything like that. Yeah. So there's probably a little bit of a disadvantage, I think, going into high school, but just wasn't really prepared for what it was going to take to train and become a good ball player, like at a high school level, really.
Yeah, and the program at that time was at a really high level too. So it was coming through the best era of our high school's, you know, basketball program. Yeah. So that's a unique time to come through there. Probably much different now, right?
Absolutely, your class was great, and you know we had a sort of hyped up class that I don't think ever really panned out. A lot of the guys never grew taller than what they were in, you know, in eighth grade and things like that. Just, you know, very skilled group of guys. And so I got cut freshman year. I made a really half-hearted effort sophomore year, just sort of like, we'll give it a shot. Yeah. But didn't really work towards it. Didn't even try out my junior year. And then I had a lot of changes happen in my personal life again going into my senior year. Just transformed and just my outlook and mindset did. And so one of the things with that was just wanting to be a type of person that was present in the moment, didn't have regret, like was willing to work hard for things that they wanted. And I just knew that if I never gave my full effort to trying to make the basketball team in high school that I would regret it. And so that's really what started me lifting, working out, lifting weights, things like that. Like really, I'd been sporadically here and there, you know, with friends, but to really be dedicated, I joined with the conditioning in the off season for the basketball program. And we had to run a mile every Friday, and we'd run sprint workouts on Monday and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And on the timed mile, we'd do timed mile. I think I was at 7.5 minutes the first week we did it. And the last week we ran it, I was at 5:22.
Wouldn't it be nice to improve your physical? first prime right there, right?
Exactly. So just really, and I pushed myself, you know, hard at that. And in the gym when I was working out, my bench press went from, my max was 165 at the end of my junior year when I first started, like, it was probably April or so, like very end of that year. And then when we were back in the fall, it was up to 225. And I put on 15 pounds of muscle. I started taking protein shakes and focusing on that. I was doing push-ups every night before bed, ab workouts before bed, you know. So a lot of this style of training even is stuff that, like, looking back, it's like, well, you know, the mindset was right. But, like, the knowledge of the body and how to get the most out of it.
Yeah, training to be a basketball player, you were maybe not optimizing for some of that.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, I could have done a lot more to train quickness, lateral quickness, spend a lot more time just developing the skill and not just the physical aspect of it, but just the mindset of, like, I worked my way up. I was doing 200 push-ups every single night, five sets of 40, doing this 8-minute ab workout. Well, you work the same muscle group over and 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 over again every single night. Like, it eventually starts to break down. You get negative returns. Right. And so, you know, and that's, you know, one of these ideas where even when you're doing something good, when you're young, like, you can, it wasn't good how I was doing it.
Right.
But you can get away with it because you're young.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, your youth is sort of forgiving. It's forgiving partly because of, you know, your biology and all that stuff. Yeah. But partly it's just because you haven't done so many things in your life that have cumulatively brought you down.
Right.
And so, looking back, it's like, yeah, I could have optimized even what I was trying to gain from those ab and push-up workouts, that strength, better, you know, had I taken rest days, the opposing muscle groups, not just working the push muscles.
Yeah. But if I knew what the word recovery was, if that was even a word in my vocabulary, then.
Yeah. And so that's in addition to going to the gym 5 days a week.
Exactly.
So, but that really started my love affair. So I did not make the basketball team. It's like, it just wasn't going to happen. There wasn't a spot for me. But I'm thankful for it, you know, because that really did trigger this period of my life where it's like, Craig went from being this skinny, scrawny kid. And to give you an idea, on my license, driver's license, when I first got it, so sophomore year of school, I was 6'2", 150 pounds. So, you know, very, very scrawny, string bean.
Svelte, that's the nice word for it.
Yeah. And so, you know, and it pretty much stayed that way until I started lifting, gained 15 pounds, like I said, of muscle in like about 4 or 5 months. And then just from there, it kept going. So into college, freshman year, I gained the freshman 15, maybe even 20. But it wasn't how most people do. I was putting on muscle and continuing to work out and get strong. So I ended up transferring from IU my freshman year to a smaller school, Taylor University. And because of their size and because their football program at the time was not necessarily competitive, and because of my athletic growth that I had, I actually walked onto their football team having never played football before in my life. So, yeah. And, you know, I was a standout when it came to intramural football at IU.
Rivers just started a mild controversy saying that NBA guys were more likely to be able to walk onto the NFL field rather than the reverse. So maybe you proved that right on a small scale.
Oh, man. I don't know.
The mentality. So this is that you could answer this part of the question maybe. So he said, or the pushback on it was that the NBA guys don't realize what it's like to get hit, and they would not like that part of it. So what do you think? What was it like to get hit? Because coming from a basketball background and not a lot of football or very little the physical kind, what was it like to kind of transition into that part of it?
Yeah. I mean, it was a wake-up call. They actually tried to start me on defense. So I get speed, especially for like NAIA D2.
Yeah.
I ran a 4.640, which, you know, for white guy,
yeah,
D2, like, you know, pretty pretty solid. And so I had speed and I had size. So I was about 185 pounds at the time. I was bench pressing, you know, a little over 300 pounds as my max, and had some good size. And so they were going to have me be a defensive back, and I had the speed for it. One, I didn't have the technique because I'd never done it before, but it's a different mentality. Every type of football I'd ever played, and I played a little bit of backyard tackle with guys, especially in the winter, you're all bundled up and just tackle each other, you know, but that's different. You're not wearing pads. You're not, you know, there's no form to it. Those guys don't know how to break a tackle any more than you know how to tackle and, you know, anything like that. And so, but that mentality shift from like flag football, where you're just evading a defender, you know, you're evading getting hit and, you know, having them grab your flag, to wanting to initiate that, you know, it was just a different mentality that I didn't have. I mean, so I really think there's some of those NBA guys that played high school football, and so they'd probably be all right with some of it, but the rest,
not all of them.
For me, the hardest part though was the mental part of it. So having not played, like athletically, again, I was on par. Like we do team shuttle runs and different stuff like that, and I'd win those or be in the upper echelon of them, and you know, and just run ladders and you know, suicide type stuff, as they called them, ladders for football. So athletically, I was comparable, but these guys have been playing, so everything that was second nature to them. So like lining up on the line, you know, actually it was from the huddle. They tell you to play NFL play, not NFL, but just football books are crazy. Like that level, just the number of plays there are. And then there's all these like modifiers that they add to them that take a play and completely change where you line up. And so you're trying to internalize this playbook and learn what you're doing there. But then from there, from the huddle to going and lining up, you got to know, are you on the line? Are you off the line? Is your defender up on you? Are they off? If they're on you, you need a move to get off the line, you know, with them. If they're not, just everything from route running, how you break down that route, how you catch the ball is different.
I mean,
when you're playing backyard football or intramural, like you're using your body.
Always with one hand. I'm always catching it with one hand.
Exactly. And the ball
feel, I think in any sport, when you get to higher levels, is like, the part that you missed out on, like growing up with it, is that feel that you develop. Like you can learn a playbook or learn how to position yourself, but to adjust in the game, you have to have a little bit of feel. It has to be kind of, you know, out of your consciousness somewhat, right? You just kind of have to be able to get in the flow and in the moment. And that's such a hard thing to do. That's kind of cool that you were able to at least get on there to contribute in that way, and, you know, to upload it so quickly. But another step on that kind of evolution that you're talking about, and scratch that itch of maybe proving that you could compete in a structured environment. You had that athletic ability within you to step into that. So that, you know, I'm sure, like I said, I'm sure different high school, you would have been able to as well. Just probably happened more to the timing of everything.
Yeah. So then it just continued from there. And it's embarrassing to say now, but I was one of those guys that like wasn't doing leg day. I would do other activities that involve my lower body. I would do, you know, cardio. I would run. I would play ball. I would, you know, and I was quick and I could jump. And so it was like, you know, it just wasn't on my radar as much. I do air steppers and stuff like that. And think, okay, I'm getting my lower body, but I wasn't squatting. I wasn't deadlifting. I wasn't doing that heavier stuff that then football brought into it. And that's a funny story too. I remember squatting there first day in football weights, in-season weights. And you just did like, it was kind of maintenance. You did like three sets of five. And I started 135 pounds with my squat and more than I've ever been in my life after it. And but that spring you do all your testing, like your one rep maxes and stuff. And they would do projected max, not an actual one rep max. And so my max had gone up to 326.
Wow.
Which, you know, again, in a short amount of time to go from five reps at 135 being hard to like being able to do that.
Solid growth.
And so, and it was good. It was essential for me to like start to learn that stuff. So continued to do that through college, and then actually going to college for, I was going to go into ministry, and just in my experience at college, just it's difficult to make my faith, my school work. And so I experienced a bit of burnout on that. And so I didn't really want to go right into ministry position, feeling kind of burnt out where I was. And so the next thing I was like, I'm gonna be a personal trainer, because I'm informally doing it anyhow. You know, as a guy, I was big guy. I was a strong guy. I was the guy that's like people on my floor. Hey, what should I do here? Can I work out with you? You know, different stuff like that. So, so I got certified personal trainer and I went through NASM for that and became personal trainer and ended up doing that for years.
So I don't know what gym you're at, but I remember you showing it to me and we talked about this off air before we started, but I've seen power plates again, kind of popping up. And I remember you showing me these things. I thought that it was the most insane thing I'd ever seen. I was like, what in the world is this thing? A vibrating plate that I'm going to squat on. And I think now like the principles of it, because again, just with time and more knowledge, I understand some of the, just the biomechanics that go into it. And you probably knew some of it at the time, but as more of a novice, I looked at it and I was like, this is ridiculous. And then the price of them too, I think they were like $10,000-$20,000. I don't know what it was at the time, but it was incredible.
Yeah. So it has a very much a like 70s or whenever it was with those belts with the things that take you. It has a lot of that vibe to it where it feels very gimmicky. Mm-hmm. Standing on this plate and it's vibrating you and it's going to give you these results, but it's a little different. You know, those belts that were shaking you, like you didn't have to work. This was going to like shake the fat off you. Power plate never claims you're not going to have to do work on it. What it's saying is you're going to get a more efficient workout. You're going to get more muscle activation because of these vibrations that are occurring. And so it's called whole body vibration technology. And it was developed by the Russian cosmonauts. They were going into space and their muscles were atrophying because there was zero gravity, you know, and so they were losing muscle mass and bone density and everything like that. So they developed this vibrating plate that vibrates in three planes of motion. It does so at a rate of like 30 to 50 times per second. So it's very rapid. And as it's doing that, vibrating in these three planes of motion, it's causing involuntary muscle contractions and it's putting G-forces on your body, which is going to help prevent that muscle atrophy. So the claims are that it increases obviously muscle activation, but also that it's increasing bone density as you put those G-forces on the body. It's increasing circulation, lymphatic drainage. It helps your muscles when you stretch on it to relax. And so just, a lot of like kind of bold claims. And I was working at
like a whole body Theragun.
Yeah, exactly. And we're seeing more like the benefits of vibration you know, with these like personal massagers and stuff that. And there's a lot of validity to that. So on the recovery standpoint, I think like people have an easier time accepting that, you know, it's massaging you or
feels good. Yeah.
Causing lymphatic drainage. Cause that makes sense. You know, any sort of like running and jumping does that as well. And so, you know, this vibrating on there, but you get down and you do a set of pushups on them and it's harder than just doing it on the floor. So you can tell that it's accelerating the fatigue and you can get more done. But I'd worked at this more boutique style training facility that really catered towards a really high end clientele. And it really made for a great marketing tool. This before these things were really mainstream. If you could call it, they're mainstream now, but my Lifetime Fitness here in Indy, they have it. And, you know, I know that a lot of the pro teams and stuff like that have used them. The guy that owned this boutique was a little bit more on the front end of it, but it gave us something that separated us from the other people.
Right.
And we had these individual training suites. There's like eight trainers and they each had their little private training room. And it was kind of centered around, there's a power plate in each one. And then there's a cable cross and dumbbells and a stretching table and a massage chair. And so you give these people sort of a pampered boutique style workout where they're building strength, but they're leaving more muscles stretched out, relaxed, getting a little bit more bang for their buck in that amount of time with the power plate. And so,
I felt like it was, you know, felt very cutting edge. Then it still sounds like what if you'd walk into like a higher end place in Los Angeles or something, some version of that is still around. I think that's the good thing about working out is that a lot of the things around the edges evolve, but I mean the human body is still the same as it was thousands of years ago. So you can also look backwards a long ways and, you know, just through study of history, find out things that worked really well and maybe just got lost. And I think that's maybe even some of the things that we'll talk about have sort of reemerged in that space. Craig, I've got to pause the conversation for just a minute and talk about Magic Mind. Anyone who's looking to level up the health and wellness game, usually has some kind of energy deficit in the afternoon, whether you're at work or even while you're working out. Too often, you're reaching for one of those energy drinks that has tons of sugar and other just chemicals or additives in it. And as you and I have been talking about these health and wellness tips, we've got to find a way to get that extra boost and not have the other side of it. And me personally, I've started reaching for Magic Mind, and solution to not just mental energy and focus, but it removes that crash that came from the other energy drinks that I used to try. Magic Mind is packed with all natural ingredients. One of them, matcha, is one I've really grown to appreciate. It basically works like an extended release caffeine. Again, sustaining energy without the roller coaster or the crash. So if you're looking for something like that and that sounds interesting to add to part of your routine without sacrificing the convenience, you can go over to magicmind.com/19. That's 19, N-I-N-E, magicmind.com/19. And of course, you get a special treat. You can get up to 56% off a subscription or 20% off one-time purchase. Again, that's magicmind.com/19. Elevate your energy, boost your focus, conquer the day. Use Magic Mind. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, and that's always been an interest to me. And maybe the power plate contributed to it because that was my first experience. And really, that style of training was different. So I had gone from, I worked at Lifetime Fitness for about 6 months before getting connected with this studio. And then at the studio, they had a totally different approach. Like, you know, we're not going to just do these really traditional standard compound lifts and go from machine to machine and things like that. Like, we're going to view the body in a way that we're thinking about, you know, the sum of the parts equaling the whole and making sure that each individual part is doing what it's supposed to do. And so that shouldn't have been really a novel concept, but really for my exposure and the way, you know, you just go through a standard CPT, you know, certified personal training certification and, you know, lifting as an athlete and things like that. But so it's really kind of an interesting way. And not only do we want to activate each muscle group, make sure it's doing what it's doing, but we want to avoid tension because tension is going to lead to other issues and overcompensations and injuries. So we want to develop the muscle, but we want to elongate it, you know, and at the same time. And so we want the muscle to be long and strong. And so all that was new, but it did kind of trigger just a love for this idea of maybe there's something else out there, not necessarily a silver bullet, but just a different way to think about it to give you an edge or, you know, maybe we've gotten away from something that 2000 years ago, like they knew. And, you know, so I was really intrigued when the barefoot running like phase. And I was doing, you know, ice baths before they were as commonplace. And, you know, and I was doing that largely for just the mental training.
Just to abuse yourself.
Like a thing. And so, yeah, so just whatever it is, like I'm always intrigued by this different way of thinking. And really the older I get, the more I get into it, the more I'm skeptical of whatever the mainstream view is on something. And we're finding more and more that, you know, without being a full-blown conspiracy theorist, that like, there are people that have invested in studies to skew the results so that they can make money. I mean, we live in a capitalistic, you know, in a country and environment. And
yeah, you don't have to look too far. Cigarettes, easy example, right?
And like,
you know, opioids, more recent.
You know, it's coming full circle. Like, butter's good for you,
right?
You know, these good fats are good for you. Meats, red meat, you know, not processed stuff, but that. Good for you. And, you know, but when they came out with the butter is bad for you, it's like same time they're promoting all these sugary foods and everything. Like that. Like, it's fat that's making you fat, not the sugar. And so there's just always somebody with ulterior motives. And, you know, the higher up you go, the more money there oftentimes is. And so I think it's just good to question everything. You know, I don't think you need to live in this conspiracy theorist like headspace necessarily where, you know, I don't know where you're paranoid about everything, but just to think like, I'm fascinated about the knees over toes guy. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, as a trainer, I can't tell you the number of times I told people on a squat and a lunge, like you never want your knees to go out in front of your
right. Yeah.
It is going to cause knee problems. Yeah. You're going to injure yourself. Like you can't load them. you know, with that much pressure and weight and all that. And, you know, and I think his concept is just, like I said, it's so against the grain of what we were taught. Mm. And yet it makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and conceptually it makes a lot of sense, and he's seeing a lot of success. And as long as you scale it, you know, at an appropriate rate, and you don't just jump to doing, you know, heavy squats with,
right, you know, yeah, instantly,
your knees are going in front of your toes.
If you can only do 135, don't put 300 on there.
That by not going through and working strength through the full range of motion of all these joints, and, you know, there's something called similar concept, but for your back, like called a Jefferson curl, where, you know, you're always told you don't want to have weight and load your back and then round it. You know, you got to keep a flat, straight back. And, you know, and he's really challenging that idea. And there's this shift to say, no, like, your back rounds, you bend over and pick stuff up. Like, we need to strengthen it through that. We don't want to baby stuff and limit the amount of, like, range of motion. And especially if you start to run into back issues or knee issues, the common thing is like, oh, well, we got to be careful. So now we got to do less, and we got to baby it, and we got to stop doing these things.
Get a brace.
Get them to last as long as we can. Yeah. Instead of staying, no, we can actually force circulation through those areas. We can bring new muscle, new strength. You can even potentially, you know, increase cartilage and things like that, where just the traditional mindset is like, once that's gone, it's gone. And you can build strength in a back that has issues with your discs and things like that. And so, yeah, just a different way of looking at things. And I'm always interested and open to that. And so my view of fitness is constantly evolving and has evolved. And yeah, just bring it full circle. I wish I could go back to.
So I want to ask you this then. Says the branding with the second prime, you know, kind of says that your first prime ended at some point. So I'm curious then, like, what was that demarcation for you? Because there's this moment where you're kind of on the bleeding edge of things. Where did things, you know, evolve to, or force you into kind of another one of those scenarios, like you talked about earlier, where you needed to evolve into the things that you're, the approach that you have now?
Yeah. So, you know, looking back in hindsight, there were like signs along the way. Like, I'm crushing it physically. You know, I think back to like my stats, you know, I was 6'2", 200 pounds, 5% body fat. I ran a 4.640, 5.22 mile. I could, at my peak, I bench pressed 225, 25 times. I think I got 309 times. I could dunk a basketball. I did 37 pull up, you know, and so like all these markers where it's like,
I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. Peak kind of fitness level, you know, to a degree, you're in that upper echelon. And yet, because of how I was training, like, my body hurt, you know, I constantly was battling like muscle tension, aches. I had some knee issues. I had some back issues. I felt sort of beat up, even though I could perform at a high level. But then some other things started happening, you know, digestion issues started creeping in. You know, those led to me experimenting with like my diet a little bit more, trying a gluten-free diet, trying to, you know, reduce dairy, like just playing with a lot of different things. But the big kind of off the cliff thing, or at least what started it, was I actually went back to school when I turned 30, and I went from working a personal trainer job all day, where I was up on my feet, moving around, and in between clients, I was working out, and we had the power plate in there. I was stretching, I was doing things to offset this tension, to going back to school and sitting for 6 to 9 hours in a classroom, like a day. We had really long, like 3-hour classes that would, a couple of them a day. And then you go back and you're doing homework. And I did have a part-time training job, so I was still working out, but just the sheer volume of the amount of time I was sitting. And then as a student now, like, my food prep time went down, types of food I was getting, I was on more of a budget, like all that started to shift, you know, then you still had these digestive issues. And so my body started to, like, you know, move into what I would call like chronic inflammation, pain, fatigue, started to disrupt my sleep. You know, the digestive pain mixed with like muscle tension in my hips, my knees, and then just like my side, where like my digestion, you know, was, would just like it would hurt. So I'd get about 3 hours of sleep. And then after that, I'd wake up in pain and just start, you know, tossing and turning. So, so these things sort of compound on one another. You know, you go from being really active to really sedentary. You go from sleeping 8-9 hours a night to, you know, getting maybe 4 or 5 hours of good sleep and a couple hours of like really restless sleep. But one of the other adjustments I made, and again, didn't really just think about this till looking back on it in hindsight, but because of the digestive discomfort that I was going through. And I think what happened is like, you have like psoas muscles and stuff like that, that when you're sitting can like sort of lock up and they can start to pinch down on like, you know, your intestines and like gut there, and they can cause pain there and pinch stuff off. So as that digestive pain increased and that I started to like react, I didn't have like rashes, but it felt like it was like crawling. Wow. Like it would start to like itch all around my midsection. So I just started eating less because it's so uncomfortable to eat more.
Makes sense.
And so I went from probably, you know, in my prime eating 3,500, 4,000 calories, you know, fuel, my body weight and protein, all that stuff you're supposed to do, to probably reducing it down to around 2,200 calories. And so at my frame and my muscle mass and still trying to work out, I was like drastically under nourishing. Then made the muscle pains and tightness and stuff like that all the worse.
Right. Yeah.
So trying to push through these workouts, breaking them down, and they don't have what they need to repair.
Yeah.
And so just this like compounding
circle.
Vicious circle.
Yeah.
Just going on. And so that was sort of my reality. I would spend many nights, 2 hours a night before going to bed, rolling on a foam roller and a tennis ball and a racquetball and using a massage or whatever I could to like offset that tension just to be able to sleep, you know, more than 3 or 4 hours. Yeah. And so that kind of went on for a while. And then in 2018, I think it was, I got a traumatic brain injury.
Whoa.
And so it was kind of stupid of me, but we were living at that house in Indianapolis in Broad Ripple area. And it had an old detached garage and it was, you know, it had a clicker and, you know, all that. And, but it was the old spring system.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So
it's like my garage. Yeah. It's like my garage right now.
Yeah. We've got two huge metal coil springs on each side. And, apparently they're very dangerous. I didn't know that.
They look dangerous.
Yeah. So we'd been fixing up our house, getting ready to sell. And we had painted our garage door and we'd painted it with a down and it sort of like sealed even the creases. And then to go up, it sort of like popped and it popped off the track.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I can fix this.
Yeah.
And I get two of the bolts out and the third one is like bent. Like sideways.
Oh man.
And I'm like, oh man, look at this. This is like, you know, just thinking like, oh, this needs to be bolt.
What could go wrong here?
So it was actually bending under the tension of the spring. It wasn't bent when I started.
Oh my gosh.
It's bending under, that's how much force was on it. And so I unscrew a little bit longer and it releases and it hit me square in the forehead.
Wow.
Metal plate did. And I tried to explain the force that hit me with, you know, to a friend and was like, man, it felt like, well, I can equate it to, it's like put my head on a golf tee and someone swung their driver as hard as they could.
That's probably accurate. Yeah.
He goes, it was more force than that.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, that goes through people's, if those snap, those springs snap, like, you know, they've killed people. Wow. They can go through people's walls, like into their house, through their car, like all sorts of stuff like that. Just by God's grace, you know, I wasn't severely hurt. But when I got hit, the only thing that went through my head was like the scenes in a movie where someone gets shot or stabbed or whatever, and they're with it for a few seconds. They realize like that they've just been shot and then they die, you know? I'm like, that's what's going to happen. Like I thought my, probably literally like my brain's like split open. And so I ripped my shirt off. Somehow I didn't get knocked out, but I ripped my shirt off. Tied it as tight around my head as I could, ran inside and was like, Brittany, you got to call the ambulance. So I went to the hospital and had a brain bleed and they kept me overnight. Jeez. And I was concussed and I had headaches, you know, for I couldn't look at screens for like a month and then couldn't really do physical activity for a couple months. And so after that, though, brain fog kind of became an issue. So that was kind of the next stage of my digression health-wise. And then
that's interesting. It's interesting to hear because everybody ends up dealing, you know, I'm connecting with a lot of these things myself, just like food as you get older and your sensitivity to it changes. Like, oh, I could crush like a whole pizza and a Mountain Dew and then go play basketball afterwards. Like that was kind of a normal thing. And like the thought of that now makes me feel a little ill. So just sitting and, you know, some of those things. And so that's why I think it's been interesting even watching some of the things that you're talking about now and thinking about like, How do you design, some protocols or just lifestyle changes that can keep you feeling well for, an extended period of time? Because I think that giving into that, I'm sure you'll get into that, that's the worst thing you can do because it doesn't stop. Like just because you're like, oh, I guess this is it, that it can get worse.
And mine did get worse. Yeah. And so, so I had the brain injury, and then 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. So I was fortunate on that. There's different types of testicular cancer, yeah. Obviously. I had the slower, less aggressive form of it, and it was still isolated. I had a very large tumor in the testicle, but it hadn't spread anywhere else. And so I was very fortunate they were able to do a surgery and removed the testicle, but I didn't have to go through the chemo and radiation. Man, so
that's crazy. What was it like to hear that to someone say you got cancer?
Yeah. And that's where like, it's very easy, especially social media, like to compare and you're like, well, I could have been worse. I could have hit. And I feel very fortunate, sure. But like there is something mentally that like shifts when you hear those words, when you hear, yeah, it's cancer, mm-hmm. and we have to operate and then we have to scan you every 6 months for the next like 10 years to make sure that it didn't spread somewhere else. You don't have, and like, very obviously your mind just automatically goes to kind of the worst case scenario and what this could mean. And so it's a very scary time. I think it was a growing time in terms of shifting my mindset a little bit and just kind of getting back to what's most important in life. And for me, like my kids were just like a huge thing. Like, I feel like my faith has gotten me to a place where like, I'm not terrified to die myself. Mm-hmm. Now that my life is so intricately like tied to these other people that depend on me, like my wife, sure. my kids, like it's more terrifying to like think about them growing up without their dad and not being there for those milestones and the anguish that it would bring and the therapy that they, just all of a sudden. And that sort of triggered like a fear, I guess, that I didn't realize I had, that was, a fear of me dying and not being there for my kids. Mm-hmm. And it was just a different fear. I'd never really been a hypochondriac or fearful that I was going to die, and worried about dad. It's like I know where I'm going and it's good, and Apostle Paul said to die is gain, and I'd lived and tried to live my faith out in a way that internalized that, but then having kids is just like a totally different game changer. And I've done some different things to help with that. I've started a thing where just every year on their birthday I write them a letter, and it's written as if like so they know how much that, especially at their young age, they're like 2 and 4. It's like, would they even remember me? And, would they know how their dad felt about them and how much they meant to, and stuff like that. And
that's cool.
Just to like write that and just, and I figure if something were to happen to me, they'd have these letters from me. And if not, like, it'd be cool when they go off to college or something to give them a binder, full of these letters. And so, but just needing to do that almost as like a therapeutic thing for myself, like just, there's some things you can't control, but like, this fear of like not being there for them, at least like maybe I could leave something behind. And so definitely still wrestled with like, the same as if it had been another type of cancer, and a different diagnosis, and just wrestling with what that meant. And
That's crazy, man.
Finite we are. But oddly enough, that was not the thing that triggered. Back
in making these changes. Like, I'm good. How many pull-ups could you do at the time? Yeah.
So
I was still at 27 pull-ups.
It definitely triggered a shift a little bit.
Okay.
We were more cognizant as a family. Like, you know, Brittany was more, are you getting enough greens and mm-hmm. healthy foods and stuff like that? But it wasn't the thing that like fully triggered the, like, I'm going to do whatever I need and can, whatever I can control to get my health back, I'm going to do it. And that actually didn't happen until is about 15 months ago.
Okay.
We were in this rental house. And from the moment we moved in, we just all started getting sick. And it was like respiratory stuff. So it was like, is this allergies? Like, you know, what is it? But it just like, it never went away. Like my poor kids, like my son was just like so congested and like plugged up and couldn't breathe. And so just all this stuff. And it's sort of a Hail Mary to just say, I think we should see if get up like an air test mm-hmm. for mold. Cause it just felt like, you know, you kind of feel like your house should be this safe haven where you like go and you're protected and you can recover and you can, you know, but there was just something inside me that felt like
something's
no,
up.
Like, yeah, this like where we're living, our environment is making us sick. Hmm. It just was like an intuition thing almost. And so I got a little paranoid about the water too. And I was just like, I feel like the bedrock of health is clean water and clean air, like the most basic things necessary to survive.
Yeah, elemental, know? Right?
Yeah, and you need to have clean water. And so we had someone out come out and test for mold. And we've since then, we've been connected with multiple other families that had small children and stuff.
Same thing.
That had black mold and same thing. And, you know, in some cases worse. And, man. You know, young children can have seizures and different effects from it. And so we're fortunate our kids were a little bit older and that we just had the wherewithal, I guess, to the luck to, to test it. And so we got out of there and then my wife is a nutritionist, Brittany, and so she is kind of tied in and connected on social media to all these different like nutrition podcasts and different stuff. And there's different sides of like, you know, different camps in terms of how you're looking at it. And, you know, are you the by the book, like here's what all the studies say? Are you a little bit outside of that where you're a little more open to some of the more, I guess, holistic and functional like medicine type ideas? She was getting really interested in this concept called nutrigenomics.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know what that is, but it's kind of like looking at your, it's doing genetic testing, looking at your genetics and then seeing basically how you should be eating, supplementing, all these different things based off of your genetic. You have all these different SNPs that they're learning what each individual one does.
Makes sense.
And, you know, you can do this testing and it'll tell you whether this SNP is a little bit over my head. So whether it has like a high impact, medium impact, or low impact on your health.
And right. Some people are like trying to do it now with like the glucose monitors, right? It's a version of that where you like wear one of those continuous blood monitors and you eat something and it's like, oh man, that spiked my insulin levels to like a crazy amount. Weird. So little less sophisticated version of that. This sounds like even like in the next level up.
Yeah, exactly. And it's even somewhat tied to that because, you know, you can look at your glucose sensitivity and different things like that with this test. And so I don't know what it was about that. Maybe it was just going back to this idea of like, I'm always intrigued by I like new ideas because there's possibility, right? It gives you almost like hope. Like, and I think for so long I'd been in this victim mentality, you know, with my health and, you know, I'm trying to stretch because I'm tight and I'm trying to eat less and figure out what food it is. Other than that, it's just sort of like, I'm just getting old, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, that's
my health declining and it's just, it is what it is. And I'm not in the place that I was. I'm no longer that strong guy and that fit guy. Like, you know, over time, I never really stopped working out, but I started working out a little bit less and like I started working out with less intensity because my body just couldn't handle it. And so I think at my low point, I got down to 178 pounds and I really had this thought. I've already had cancer once. If I don't change something, I'm going to die. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next month, you know, but sometime I'm going to get something worse than the cancer I have because my body is just constantly, it's inflamed. It's sick. It's not functioning right.
Well, I just think that's such a cool mindset to evolve to that, you know, later in life. I think about just how locked in that can be.
as you age, because of course you have to evolve your approach to training. You can't just go out and train 7 days a week and not be more mindful about what you're eating. But if you can learn to start to balance those things, and that's certainly one of my questions is, how have you figured out, because it seems like that's something that you're really trying to hone now, how to balance all these things? Because you've mentioned this is part of your life, but you've got a full life outside of this too. Now you've got a family, you've got a full-time job on top of this. So finding out the fun of learning about these things, but it always seems like to me there's another new thing. Where does this one go? And this one, and it's like putting together a puzzle. And sometimes I do feel, me personally, and probably maybe people listening too, feel a little overwhelmed. Where do I start? How do I build a pyramid? How do I build a foundation? And then start working up to some of the other things that could be exciting. What's the like foundation that you started to build then?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And you know, I think that it's easy to get overwhelmed and just think I'm already overwhelmed. I don't have enough time in my day. Mm-hmm. And that's where this concept, I really want people to start to rethink their daily rhythms. And I think that we've gotten it so backwards as a society and so turned upside down that we're living in a way that is so counter to human thriving, you know, so counter to what we were intended to.
Yeah.
And up until, you know, this modernization of culture with the technologies we have and things like that, like, it's not how humans live. Now, you make the argument, oh, well, our life expectancy is longer than it was back then. And certainly technology has assisted, you know, in protecting us from natural disasters and people dying of cold and hypothermia. And like, I mean, so, and just being more sanitary as a culture has been, you know, huge, indoor plumbing and different things like that. But the way I view it is, we have daily rhythms. Mm. You have things that are commonplace, you know, almost going back to that football, like, what's second nature for you? You don't question because it's just part of your life. Mm. And part of that was instilled when you were a young kid, like, this is just, you know, what you need to do. You need to brush your teeth and you need to eat three meals and you need to shower every day and you need to wash your hands after. And I feel like that's when a lot of the formative years are in terms of our daily rhythms that we're going to carry into the rest of our life. Mm. And I recently talked on my Instagram just about, we shouldn't be blaming our age for how we feel. We should be blaming our youth, because our youth was too forgiving. And right. So during the formative years, you develop all these habits. And so,
you're marketed to. We talked a little bit about that, like how things are marketed to you. You're like, oh, you drink this to eat this. Like, and then you do, and it's great. Everything tastes great. Yeah. So,
yeah, absolutely. And it's going to look different for everyone, but like, you know, when you're young, you can pull all nighters, right?
Right.
And you can, you know, get back and have a fairly functioning day the next day, or, you know, just go back to bed at your normal time. You can eat a whole pizza at midnight. And as you transition into a work life where you're sitting in front of a desk for 8 hours a day, and then you get home and you're mentally exhausted. And so, you know, then you watch TV and you sit some more and you eat some comfort food. And so there's just a lot of different habits, but the point being is, we don't think that our normal daily rhythms are overwhelming because they're second nature to us. That's and great. So what I want people to do is to rethink those. Mm. And it's going to take a little bit of work in a transition time, but what if the things that help you thrive were just second nature?
Yeah,
you
that's know, great.
In the same way. And so that's just a big premise. And so I went from being a fitness guy to I want to be a fitness and wellness guy. Mm. And wellness fits sort of under umbrella of fitness. Wellness is like whole body health, like your whole being. And that involves, you know, your physical health, your musculature, all that sort of stuff. But it also involves your nervous system and your digestive system and your lymphatic system. And so there's a lot of wellness practices, I guess, that I've picked up. I think that most of us are too sedentary. Mm-hmm. We spend 98% of our time indoors as a whole. We shallow breathe. We're overstressed.
Wait, I don't know if I know that one. What's shallow breathe?
If you think about how you breathe all day and if you're feeling tense and stressed, like, think about whether you're breathing deeply.
Oh, okay.
or if you're just breathing
maybe,
really
maybe
shallow.
All right. I've been accused of breathing loudly before, so maybe I'm doing it right and I don't know it.
You're doing it right. Yeah. Most people are just breathing shallow. Okay, like they're not taking deep breaths throughout the day. And yeah. So you're only exchanging a little bit of that air that gets stale and trapped in, or that sort of thing.
Interesting.
Not really enough oxygen delivered, you know, throughout your body.
That makes a lot of sense.
Most people's sleep schedules are completely out of whack. And so their circadian rhythm is backwards and they have trouble going to sleep at night, but they're exhausted when they wake up and they pump themselves full of coffee to get by. So like the list goes on in terms of like what is fairly commonplace, but the number of people suffering from stress and anxiety and different things like that, I think is really high. They're finding more and more gut health is tied to your brain and it's tied to, you know, so many different things in your body. And so addressing a lot of those, but some of my core ones, you know, I was asked the other day that same question. I feel overwhelmed. I don't have the money to spend on all this stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Get my sauna and cold bath and power plate and sell my house.
And it's a spectrum. And, you know, and I got to a point where I was just like, yes, I'm spending thousands I can't afford on my health. Mm-hmm. But like, I can't afford not to because it has an effect on everything. I have no motivation from a career standpoint. Right. I'm underachieving there. Yeah. I have nothing to give when I get home to free up my wife to do more for her career. Huh. I have nothing to give relationally to make sure that doesn't fall apart and lead to like catastrophic. And so it's like, and I found that once I did start investing in that, well, I just, you know, reach new levels of you know, sales goals in my job. I'm making more commissions. I have more to help out at home. So my wife's making more. And so like, it's actually, you know.
So it's like the opposite. It's like the circle has reversed, you know, you're steering the wheel in the other way.
It's ended up resulting in more money, but you have to make that initial investment.
Sure.
And it's a leap of faith. But even if you can't do that, there's so many practices that are free. The first one I start with is get outside.
Okay.
So there's conflicting messages about like the sun, you know, and being unhealthy for us.
Yeah.
And I don't recommend going out without sunscreen.
Don't put the baby oil on
the day, but like, I think people should go out without sunscreen, you know, in the morning hours and in the later evening and get some vitamin D that actually gets through. That's not blocked by, you know, all this SPF blockage and everything like that, because most people are vitamin D deficient. And even during COVID, they found that there was a direct correlation
problem
between how sick people were and their whether they were deficient in vitamin D. So we were designed, you know, God had a plan. He knew what he was doing, you know, and so there's all these built into the environment.
Be outside,
So be outside, you know, be outside, taking deep breaths. The next is while you're outside, take your shoes off. So, you know, this is one where I would have said that's hippie stuff. Like, that's weird. Like, that's not my
thing. Do I have to get dirt in between my toes?
But like, this is one that's like a little bit more widespread supported. Like, there's not a lot of pushback saying, no, that's just hocus pocus, like, you know, stuff. And your body has a certain like charge to it, and the ground does as well. And when your skin touches the ground, it like unloads certain energy to it.
Again,
not a science guy, but the studies are showing that just like a huge reduction in inflammation. If someone's injured, there's an accelerated recovery time as a way of like, you know, grounding you physically, and helps your body just sort of discharge a lot of the negative energy that's going on in there. And so a lot of benefit to that.
That's
so
cool.
We just, if you think about it, like how often, without being intentional about it, does your skin touch the earth?
Not very often.
Yeah. You go outside, you have shoes on.
I haven't tried that one before. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, just walk around and I love it, you know, and you get to, you're outside. So those two things. So first, get vitamin D, second, grounding. You can do the next outside if you want, or do it inside, but breathing. So there's a lot of different deep breathing methods I've taken to Wim Hof. I don't know if you've heard of the Wim Hof breathing method, but I started doing that and I can tell a huge difference. So that has huge benefit for your nervous system. And so just sort of resetting that. And my busy season is October through December, and just, you know, 60, 70 hour weeks, really late nights working on my computer till 11 p.m. And to just go to bed right after that when you're all amped up. So every single night I would do that before bed. It takes about 10 minutes, do three rounds of it. And just the amount of relaxation that you have after you do that is huge. And then you know, there's other benefits to that deep breathing. It helps trigger the right digestive juices and things like that and get that going. And then just oxygenating, obviously, your blood and your muscles and stuff by intentionally deep breathing and then breathing out the stale air and things like that. Mm. So that's one I'm pretty fond of. The just being active, you know, well, getting back to being outside. So depending on where you live and how much space you have, like sometimes I'll go for a walk barefoot, but other people may not want to do that. Maybe they'll step on broken glass or, you know, sharp rock.
You got a dog now. You got to watch out for that too.
We're just like, you do. But we're good about picking that up. But or sometimes it is just kind of chasing the dog around, the kids around in the yard. I'm being active. And so I just think being active.
Substituting, that inactivity for something active. That's great.
And if your job at all allows you to, like, little 5-10 minute like spurts, get up, move around, so you're not sitting at your desk more than an hour or two at the longest without getting up and moving around, I think is huge. But then the cold therapy. So you may not be able to pay to go to a cryotherapy or your gym. My gym is awesome. It has a cold plunge at it.
That's cool.
So love it. But if you don't have that, like just the end of your shower. And Wim Hof will talk about this too. So if you want to look him up, he's a really big believer in those two things. He thinks you can boost your immune system, not get sick and thrive just doing the breathing.
He's a wild man.
And the cold plunges, but he has one where it's just you start with 30 seconds cold shower at the end of your shower. So that hot cold alteration
free is too good.
And this is something that, again, you're seeing a lot more mainstream with the cold plunges. Like the science on it is pretty overwhelming. It's releasing dopamine for like 3 hours afterwards. You're burning more calories, so you're going to burn body fat. You're going to have the feelings of relaxation. It's going to take out inflammation in your body, and then it strengthens your immune system. And so there's a lot of things in our life where our lives are hard, but they're not hard in the right way that our bodies benefit from it, because we're pampered in a lot of physical ways. We don't experience a lot of extreme shifts in temperature and things like that. And so there's certain things like exposure to cold, fasting, things like that, where you put your body in more of a survival mode in a good way, and where it has to make adaptations to try to survive. And oftentimes that means, you know, getting rid of bad stuff in your body to do it and just being efficient as possible. And so there's a lot of benefit to that. So I'm probably forgetting some, but like those are just good places to start, and all those things, you know, are free. And but just it's rethinking things like, let's get outside, let's stop being sedentary, let's make sure we're deep breathing, like let's limit our screen time, let's try to get 8 hours sleep. And you know, you can't get 8 hours sleep if your nervous system's all out of whack and you can't calm down and you have elevated cortisol. Like there's all sorts of it's hard to know where to jump in, but all those practices I just mentioned are going to assist you in multiple ways. But they're going to help you relax, and they're going to help the system reset, and they're going to help you sleep better. And so I know one other one that I really like. It's a rebounding. You heard of rebounding?
No, I never heard of it.
Basketball podcast. So not
right in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, but it's just jumping. And so specifically, usually jumping on a mini trampoline.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't have a mini trampoline, so I just jump.
Yeah.
And just like jumping rope without a rope. And that is great for kind of getting stuff moving digestion-wise, also for lymphatic drainage. So many people, because of our diet, because of the toxins we're exposed to, you have a system in your body that's meant to detox it.
Right.
So the toxins enter it, get rid of it. And so if your lymphatic system and your liver and your kidney and your gallbladder and your, you know, all these things are working how they're supposed to, then your body will eliminate that. But your modern culture has exposed us and inundated us to such an overwhelm, I think, of toxins, where there's toxins in our water, there's toxins in our air, there's toxins in the clothes we wear, there's toxins, you know, in our home, there's toxins in our water bottles, there's toxins in our cookware, in our Tupperware, in our, you know, and it's just constant. And so, you know, that combined with these other things going on with our stress and our bad sleep and everything like that, like your system gets overloaded and it's not detoxing properly. And so anything I can do to get my digestion moving a little better and drain that lymphatic system.
Those are great, easy ones. I love like easy free ways to start. Cause that's to get into anything. I think you really need to start with something easy, free, see if you can do it, because it is
it is a change. And I think, you know, you do end up having to sacrifice something. I mean, all these things, although they don't take a ton of time, they do take time. And, you know, if you can get in the right mindset, you're sloughing off things that were probably bad for you, but it doesn't mean you didn't enjoy them on some level. And so that's different. Or even there is, of course, a bizarre enjoyment in, you know, the stasis and just having that continuity in each of your days, you know, especially if you're not feeling good, sometimes shaking things up to something else that may not improve things immediately. You might feel a little bit better, but you're not going to wake up the next day and go run a marathon then, of course. So it's just the change in that mindset, I think, is a real challenge. And I think that's so much, especially like you said, when the world around you is not necessarily designed to reinforce that change, it's the often the opposite. Yeah. So that's great though. I think that's the part of the reason I've been enjoying, and you hit on a few things that we're getting long here. So I'll have to have you back on to talk about some of those things. I think one of the ones I heard you say was about clothing. And I don't know why, cause I've been interested in some of these topics, but I hadn't heard that one. I think you posted something about that. And I was like, wow, I had never thought about that before. I mean, make it again, like a lot of this stuff intrinsically makes sense. Yeah, I do love, of course, when the science confirms a lot of this, and I think that's an important aspect of it. But I've also, as I've gotten older, grown to appreciate the fact that there is an intuitive aspect to all of us, right? Like, I can look up Michael Jordan's stats and look at the numbers and know he was really good. Or I could just watch him play basketball. You know, right. Like I don't have to know what he scored to know that he's an incredible basketball player. I can just watch him and enjoy it and know. Yeah, right?
I actually look statistically. We don't have to get into the
his VORP and warp. Yeah.
You know, I watch LeBron James. He's good. It's a different game now. Statistically, you know, he's great.
Yeah.
But the eye test just doesn't measure.
It's not the same, right? Yeah.
It was just like unchallenged every time he walked through the floor.
Yes.
And he never wavered. He had a swagger too. But anyhow, that's off topic.
Yes. No, that's on topic. We're right back.
No, exactly. But I think you're exactly right. I think there's an intuition where it's just like, that makes sense. And it's and you don't want to be, you know, anti-science.
No.
You also need to take with a grain of salt. Like I said, that like sometimes the people that are funding these studies don't have necessarily your best interest in mind.
Right.
They want to make it okay for these things to be out here. And so like,
or they're on step one and then the next study is going to, flip it in a different direction.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like with the underwear, like the whole idea is like, you know, most of us have like polyester underwear essentially. Mm-hmm. Well, polyester, what is it? Oh, it's just a material to make clothes out of. Well, it's basically made out of plastic.
Yeah.
So microplastics like in your underwear that you're wearing against your body. And then there's dyes that are coloring it. And those are against your body. And then, you know, and
you're sweating,
you're working hard, you're like all this stuff. And like, we know that with like water bottles and with Tupperware, that heat makes the chemicals leach. So the same thing happened with underwear.
Why would it be different? Yeah.
And so it's interesting. And so it's like, well, you can't directly say that Calvin Klein underwear like causes cancer or causes infertility or anything that. But what you can say is that these chemicals in a lot of these major underwear brands cause infertility. Like there's science to back that up.
Right.
But just when you put them in underwear, people, that underwear is not causing that. Well, maybe not.
Yeah.
But the chemicals that you're wearing on your body against your boys down there, are proven to have these adverse effects. And so, it's just thinking a little bit more. And it is overwhelming. You cannot detox your entire environment.
Right, yeah.
And so
good luck
with that. Again, if you're going to invest some money, what I recommend first, clean air, clean water.
Right.
And so
what goes into you, right, is going to be the most important thing. Cause that's going to be
reverse osmosis. I'll never not have one in my home, and a good air purifier, at least one, probably one in each level, maybe a couple more, making sure that we're breathing clean air. I want my home to be just a safe haven, a recovery place. You know, that we don't have to worry about if it's making us sick, but that it's getting better. I think starting there, but then Tupperware, switch to glass. I think getting rid of that, stop drinking out of plastic bottles, they're leaching stuff. And then chemicals you're putting on your skin. So if you're a big lotion user, things like that, that's being absorbed, you know, by your skin. Your skin's an organ. It has pores. It breathes like all these sorts of things.
This has been great, man. It's been great just learning a little bit more about this. And I would encourage everybody to check out your Instagram, because I really have found it valuable, thoughtfully distilling a lot of the things that I've been getting just randomly through other social media platforms or podcasts that I've been listening to. I know I've talked about to other people about the Huberman podcast and had people listen to that, but you're doing a good job, I think, of summarizing a lot of those things. And maybe again, like if you're new to this and you don't want to listen to a 3-hour podcast that gets deep into the science, maybe looking at someone who's been on this journey. And that's why I appreciate you sharing kind of your journey, the up and down of it, and saying, okay, you know, this is some of the stuff that's working, and there's no reason that can't work for other people. Free things like drinking water and making it a part of a lifestyle rather than just something that you do when you're feeling down one day or have a rough day, like making it the consistency of it is the hardest part. And I think that's what you're speaking to.
Yeah. And so, and just to kind of summarize, like, I do think that a lot of those practices I talked about are enjoyable, maybe not the cold ice bath or whatever, yeah. But you know, it is like, you'll learn to love if you don't immediately love just taking off your shoes, walking in the grass, in the sun. Again, don't do the hottest, strongest. So probably not from like 11 to 3, but like outside of that, get some early morning sun. It's great for your circadian rhythm. Walk out there, breathe deeply. Like all these things are going to bring this like positive endorphin release, good, relaxed feeling. And they're not hard. So it's not like I'm telling you to go get in the gym and start doing boot camps. And
right.
Me, it was addressing a lot of these things. You got to get back to that point where the Mamba mentality can actually work for you instead of against you. Or you got to redirect that Mamba mentality towards these things, towards this recovery, and then go from there. So,
That's so awesome. All right. You're going to come back on, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And people should go follow you, the Instagram. Are you doing any training right now, or are you trying to kind of gather some momentum on there to do, you know, some consulting, or what's your kind of goals in that space?
Yeah. And I think that
maybe it's both.
Yeah. Sort of your mission overflows from your testimony almost in a way. And so, so I've got this passion, you know, again, that it's sort of died out in training. It becomes sort of monotonous after all the years I've been doing it, and I need an outlet for it. And you know, I want to share with people, because I think there's an epidemic of, you know, exactly similar situations where you're in your 30s, 40s, and you feel like crap and don't know how to get out of it. You think maybe I'm just getting old and you're stuck with it, and really just want to reinforce this idea that, like, if you're willing to change your lifestyle, your environment, that, you know, you can thrive and you can reach your second prime. And I'm not there yet, you know, but I'm climbing, you know, I'm getting back there, and I've got some goals, and really want to, instead of just resign to the fact that my best years are behind me, like just kind of push and thrive and see what the body is capable, but do of it with this new knowledge now, you know. Nice. It's kind of like George come back with the wizards and do everything physically, but he outsmart everybody, you know, he had all that wisdom. So
if only he hadn't been still smoking and gambling and drinking.
I mean, we don't have to get, we can get into that. You know, the idea, like, people are always like, LeBron would have dominated the 80s. And
90s. Right.
Maybe. But if you drop LeBron in the 80s and 90s, you have to take away modern.
Yeah. You know, all his training advantages. Yeah.
All the advantages, and put him on level ground with everyone else. Yeah. So he wouldn't have had the sports science to, you know, to equip him how he is. So he wouldn't be 260 pounds and, you know, the same level of athleticism. He'd still be elite. Oh, yeah. But, you know, not the same level. Same thing that you drop Jordan into it, and, you know, you give him all the sports science and a hyperbaric chamber to sleep in. And now, would Jordan have listened? Would Jordan have done it? I don't know.
Separate story, yeah.
No, but, you know,
if you could have made it into a competitive game, definitely would have done
it. I mean, you talked to Tim Grover, there was no one more like hardcore about preparing, doing what he needed to do. Yeah. And especially you take him in those years when he couldn't get past Detroit, he would have done whatever necessary. Yep. So if he could spend $10 million on, you know, his body,
he would have done it.
He would have done it. And, you know, and there's rumors about LeBron potentially using some enhancing things too. So who knows, but we won't start that rumor. But yeah, so anyhow, to answer your question, so my vision for it is, I would love to get into programming and training. Okay. I want to release like a 12-month midlife reset plan.
I like that.
So that I can just sell sort of to everybody, and then offer additional levels of like engagement as well. But I'd like to lay out, just introduce people to all these wellness practices, talk about their benefits, how they fit into, you know, this overall fitness plan that we're going to be doing, and just kind of reset their lifestyle, help them reclaim their health, and then reach their second prime.
That's great. I hope you, build community with it too, because I think that that's one of those things that's harder as you get older too, is to have the connection with the other people that are doing, that are climbing that hill to, you know, together. Because they're, you know, even the places that I am connected outside of work, people aren't necessarily into working out or being healthy. You know, we have other interest, you know, shared interests, but it's not always that. All right, yeah. Man.